can turn the world on with a smile. You can take a nothing day and suddenly make it all seem worthwhile. Well, it's your girl and you should know it. Each glance and every little movement you show it.
Love is all around.
Don't need to fake it.
You can never it down.
Why don't you take it? You're gonna make it after all.
Look, if I don't record this now, it may never be recorded. I know what you're saying. No great loss to humanity. I get it. That's fine. I would agree with you. In fact, I might even say right now that I'm going to give myself permission maybe to not record next week. Maybe that'll help with the other stuff that I've been procrastinating on. Because I've been finding this has been a tough week for me. I've been having a hard time being motivated to do anything in the face of what seems to feel like constantly crappy news, both worldwide and nearby. I was going to record yesterday, but my stomach was exploding. My bowels, to be specific. I'm sorry, it's kind of early to get so gross, isn't it? I apologize. But yeah, and speaking of explosions, there was a bomb scare at the Hollywood Max station yesterday, which also was part of my distraction for not recording because I kept following the news for an hour and a half when I was planning to record. Anyway, that Hollywood Max station is the same one where there was the stabby, triple stabbing, double homicide. And yesterday, somebody called in a suspicious backpack, and so they closed down the entire Max station. Then they closed down the entire Max line, and they closed down the highways surrounding the Max station, so that way you could watch the live robot on your computer there go in and then explode the backpack, which apparently was a false alarm. The guy who owned the backpack phoned in the false alarm, and they found him downtown about an hour later. So, that's and you know when I mentioned that the Laurelhurst neighborhood shut down because of some guy walking around with a gun that the police fired at a couple of times and he escaped. That guy, it was a fake gun, and he was released the next morning. Or by the next, maybe even earlier. So, 12 hours of police manpower and huge police presence just to let the guy go. And I'm going to guess that's probably what happened with Mr. Backpack Bomb Scare yesterday. He shut down part of the city for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and he's probably already out of jail. So life is cool. Life is pretty awesome. And Oh, and also, another thing about that Hollywood Max triple stabbing, double murder that I forgot to mention is the older man that was killed. He was like in his early to mid 50s. As he was there dead, bleeding out of his neck, some 55-year-old homeless white dirtbag of a man decided to steal his backpack. Not only that, he also decided to slide off his wedding ring from the corpse, bleeding out of his neck. He just seized the moment, carpe diem, motherfucker. And Yeah, it was even like a little while before that was noticed and reported, but with all the rest of the brouhaha, and they caught the dirtbag within 24 hours of getting his photo out there, thanks to an intrepid pizza girl who worked at some pizza joint that's near the Hollywood Max station, where this dirtbag used to go in on a regular basis asking for food or to use the bathroom or to ask for water or whatever. So she recognized him and pointed the police to the homeless camp that he lived in. That was, you know, he and his buddies had set up under the bridge right near there, by the Hollywood Mac station, also conveniently located to the Mac station of death. And the motherfucker was wearing the dead guy's wedding ring when the police showed up and arrested him. So yeah, one of the additional counts or charges or whatever against him is abuse of a corpse. So, you know, it's been that kind of keep Portland weird. Yep. You know, if there's one silver lining to all of this, if there's one baseball bat full of lemonade to be made from all of this, is maybe fewer people will want to move here. You know, maybe that could happen. Although I did see some transplants moving into the building next door yesterday. How do I know they're transplants? Because they showed up with a giant pod, and it was just a man, a white man, his wife, and baby. And no family or friends to help him unload the pod, which I'm sure he probably would have appreciated some extra hands when the pouring rain started. Welcome to Portland, motherfuckers. Oh, I'm sure everybody in that condo, apartment, whatever building is going to really be happy that a baby has moved in. But I think on the upside for me, I haven't seen the curly-haired tots, one of which was the one that looked into my bedroom window and scared the shit out of Millie last year. I haven't seen them around at all, so maybe they moved out of the apartment that the babies moved into. I don't know. Either way, it's been a lot quieter here. There's been no kids playing in the parking lot. I haven't been paying attention to the security camera. Like, I don't sit there and stalk the footage anymore because it's just been quiet and mellow. I still have it there as a deterrent and everything. Because that seems to be going good with keeping the kids away and keeping folks away from my window. Plus, I also like, just like right now as I'm sitting here talking, I've got the screen on my little other electronic device, and I can just look out, and it's like I've got a little window here on my coffee table looking out the window. But yeah, at least with the neighbor's situation improving, I feel safe at home for the first time, which is perfect timing, because I kind of not feeling so safe anywhere else right now these days. I gotta admit it. But, oops, hang on a second. I don't even know why I need to say hang on before I hit the pause button, really. You know, it's been that kind of a week. I've been a shut-in for a couple of days because I had to get stuff from Amazon. So it means I had to sit here and wait for the delivery of Millie's all-important cat food and cat litter, which I hope she appreciates that I put them in their proper places so she doesn't have to shit in her food dish, because that would be uncomfortable. I know who'd be cleaning that up all over the floor. Me. Millie's a lazy piece of shit. She's a cute cat, but man, she just does not carry her weight around the apartment. I gotta tell you that. And I also had to stay home for a delivery of something fun. I got myself a little iPod Nano. I know. Who do I think I am, spending money on an iPod Nano? I'm somebody that doesn't want to use their laptop computer as their stereo, especially in the summertime in an apartment with no air conditioning, because the computer heats up. And it's a waste of a computer to use it as a stereo when I use my computer for doing photo type things. That's what my computer's for. It's a photo processor. Even though everybody's phone is that, I know. I know. Look, I'm coming into the 21st century kicking and screaming, even though it's really running rapidly towards it there at the end of the 90s. With all the tech stuff, you know? And, you know, I can't run iTunes through my Moto phone, and I don't want to use my phone data and stuff for, you know, it's just compartmentalize people. You don't necessarily need to have one device that does everything, because it usually means it's going to do some things pretty fucking poorly. And I have this lovely Bose speaker, which I do enjoy for when I'm watching movies on my computer. Sometimes I do that. I watch the movies and the Hulu and the stuff on the computer. So my Bose speaker is nice to have right there in bed next to me, so I don't have to crank up the volume on my computer and bother my neighbors. But it's also really nice to run my music through on my lovely little Nano. It's nice. I haven't turned on the CNN or the Sky News at all today. Nope, friends, right now I'm listening to Hisinal quietly in the background. Oh, the wonderful Hisinal. Because it gives me a chance to go, but that's lovely in your ear. I was whistled there. And instead of, because I still always have to look at the box known as my beautiful TV, not my vagina. I know, boxy box box. I'm watching a National Geographic Paris documentary. I need to flood my eyeballs with lots of pictures of Paris, preferably moving pictures of Paris, because I need to keep this dream real in my face and on my mind. And I need to be overstimulated with that instead of overstimulated with scary bad things of the world. Because you know that's going to happen to me when I walk around. I don't need to bring it into my home. I can just read about it on Twitter. Compartmentalize, people. That's the message of the day, I guess, if there is a message. Now, the reason I got my Nano, oh, look, I've got a little Nano. Oh, my little Nano is going to make me chicken noodle soup. Nope, not going to do that. It's because I know I'm going to need something to listen to on my plane trip to Paris. And again, I'm not going to want to use my phone for that. So it's something that I would be buying it eventually anyway. And by buying it now, I get to enjoy it now. I get to enjoy it longer. And it also means that I won't be nickel and diming and blowing my money on petty shit like $10 when you go to a coffee shop to get pastry and a coffee or on marijuana, which I have partaken in more this week than I would like to. And here's the thing about me. I'm not going to put that on a credit card. For one thing, you can't in most places. You have to use cash. And so what I've done is, did I mention I booked my flight to Paris? Hey, yeah, I also booked my flight to Paris. I know, all hope is not lost. I went ahead and did that. I'm going to be there for just a little bit more than 2 weeks. Oh my God, I'm excited and terrified, which I think is also a big part of why this week has been weird. It's just, you know, there's the big upswing of all the excitement of like, oh my God, I'm going to do this. Oh my God, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And then there's actually booking it and seeing the money and doing your budget. And then there's the kind of anti-climax of the reality of the budget and the reality of the anxiety of being on a plane for, I don't know, 10 or 13 hours. There's, you know, when there's an upswing, there's a downswing. And I'm just trying to manage it, man. But yeah, I booked my flight. I paid the extra whatever $60 for the cancellation insurance in case I get sick and can't go, because cover my ass. Not that I want to have any wiggle room not to go. But yeah, $60 is well spent just in case. I'm super excited because if my seats remain as I had picked them out, then there's no overbooking nightmare, and I can't worry about that stuff now. Let me focus on this. Let me focus on the fact that my seats are both in places that are easy to escape from when the plane explodes in the sky over Kansas. And dying in America's heartland. And I'm also right near the bathrooms, shitting on America's heartland as we fly over. I did real good for myself. And I also, for the first time, booked myself on an aisle seat. 'Cause I've got fucked up knees. And this way I can just feel like I can squirm and fidget and whatever as much as I want to, because I can sprawl in the aisle if I need to. And I don't need to be looking out the window. I've done all that stuff a gazillion times. I never thought I'd be an aisle seat person. I don't know if you realize how big of a thing this is. Let's all sit here and collect ourselves for a minute, shall we? Going to be an aisle seat person for like 10 hours in the sky. 10 to 13 hours. Let's not focus on that either, okay? Let's not. The point is I've booked everything. And I got my Nano. My sweet little Nano. She sends me little, she still buys those cards with the little envelope, the little wallet cards for money. My sweet little Nano. And so I put all that on my American Express card, because that way there's no, whatever, who cares? I don't need to go into all this boring budget stuff. Let me just say, I laid out a lot of money, and I'm going to be paying it off immediately. So it's going to be really tight here this summer, but it means I won't be going to Paris with any debt. So the only new debt that I should be having is whatever I spend for 2.5 weeks, not 2.5, almost, yeah, in Paris with a free place to stay that's 3 flights of stairs up, but I'll have my own room to sleep in on a sofa bed, because my buddy Jose sleeps in the main living room, and that's his, he lives in the one room, basically. A lot of people do that when they live alone. I don't. Fun fact about me, in my two-bedroom apartment, I live in my living room and my bedroom. There we go. Who cares? But while I'm still talking about things that make me nervous, you know, like being on an airplane for a long time. Here's the thing. I'm not scared of terrorism in Paris because, hey, look what the fuck I'm dealing with here in Portland. Look what the fuck I lived with in inner city DC in the early 80s. Look what the fuck I lived with living in Berkeley in the 90s. Like, America is just a fucking shitstorm of constant crime. Terrorism is just an additional layer to already being poor, living in dangerous neighborhoods most of my time. I'm not even living in a dangerous neighborhood. It's just, fuck balls. So many dirtbag men. I know, we've tired of hearing me say this. But next Sunday, on Father's Day, hey, shout out to the dead dads. I've got one. Sanchez has one. Do you have a dead dad too? Join the club. It's for all the cool kids. Also in the Hollywood neighborhood, there at the lovely, where that Hollywood Max is. Sorry about my phlegmy throat. Next Sunday is the Hollywood Book Club, the classic book club, that I have a 500-page novel that I need to fucking finish reading, which is another reason I probably won't record next week. Giving myself permission. Oh, heavy is the heart that doesn't record. But also next week, after the book club on Father's Day in the Hollywood neighborhood of death, we're all going out to dinner. I'm going to talk in a really high-pitched voice as my anxiety escalates. Yeah, we're going to We're going to have a meal together, and I'm already nervous. Oh, please just let me sit near Nancy. That's all I want. I don't want to sit near Larry and his big giant ears and his 19th century Victorian sexuality fixation. Not at all. I don't want that. I want to sit next to Nancy, manic, crazy Nancy, who has, you know, there's this Cloris Leachman movie. God damn it, I really should have looked it up. But it is this Cloris Leachman movie from, I think, the mid to late 70s. And the most memorable thing about it is the fact that I don't think she wears a bra at all in it. She plays this elderly woman. She plays a woman older than herself. I think she ages throughout the movie. And her huge pendulum boobs are just down around her waist. And that's Nancy. That's my manic Margot Kidder person from the book club that I love and adore, and I really hope I get to sit next to next Sunday at Dead Father's Day Dinner Classic Library Book Club in the Hollywood neighborhood of death. And I just want to say a quick congratulations to everybody in the UK and who is also governed and affected by the UK, which we all are to some degree. But hooray for Labour getting so many seats. Ah, Jeremy Corbyn, you're so awesome. If only, it just kind of makes me feel like the way the elections panned out in the UK just makes me feel even more that if Bernie had actually been on the ticket instead of Hillary, if the DNC hadn't had such fucking hero worship of the Clintons, or just been blind to the fact that it'll be so historical having our first female president. It's like, yes, but have a better one that's not so hated. I'm not saying she's not qualified, but she had flaws. If Bernie had actually been the nominee, I don't think we'd be dealing with this Trump shit. Anyway, I digress, but speaking of the Trump shit, yes, I did watch the Comey testimony, if only so I could say Coney testimony, Comey testimony. It's like a little song full of macaroni, the Comey testimony. Oh, testimony. Yeah, I watched it. I got up here at 7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time in order to watch it at 10 a.m. Washington, D.C. time. Because still, for me, watching news from D.C. feels like local news to me, which is weird. I don't really have anything to say about it. Aren't we all done with this? It's only June. He's only been in office barely 6 months, and this is how exhausting it is. Some CNN employee, journalist, commentator, guy with a series was just fired for calling Trump a piece of shit. Like, we're cracking over here. Our best and our brightest. Fuck you, Ginsburg and Howell, saying that you had lost the best and the brightest of your generation to whatever the fuck you said it was back in Howell. We're going to start losing them because people are just going to be driven completely insane by Trump and this entire administration. Oh, I'll shut the fuck up about that, okay? But here's all I really have to say about the Comey testimony. Oh, the macaroni. Like, when I was a little kid, I watched the Watergate hearings and testimony. And I was a kid, and so I was really hopeful and really naive and really excited seeing justice play out and the president leave in shame. And like, it just was this real pivotal lesson of like, yes, the government can be corrupt, but even the government will be held accountable. That was my lesson. It's like, yes, power can be corrupted and can fuck up, but they'll still be held accountable. And then during the Iran-Contra affairs, where, you know, the powerful were fucked up and corrupt, you know, I watched that more with anger, with like righteous anger and just feeling vengeful for like, God damn it, are we fucking doing this again? Seeing how fucking corrupt our government can be, that this is what's happening here with the Iran for the arms deal and just, oh, okay, I'll shut up. But so when watching that, I was just like, like raising my fist, like, God damn it, we're at this again. And now I'm a grown up and I realize that Watergate wasn't the end of this bullshit. It might be just a beginning. And yeah, that's where I was with the Comey testimony, because I was like, oh, here we are again. You know? Like, I don't give a shit about the Clinton impeachment stuff. Like, that was just like a bunch of bedwetters. That didn't even watch it, didn't even care. And the Clarence Thomas trial, I was actually getting married for the first time during some of that trial and listening to it on the way to my wedding. Hooray! Yes, I was listening to Anita Hill testify on the way to my wedding. But with this government corruption thing and the Comey testimony, see, isn't it fun to say? I just was resigned, you know? I didn't get worked up. Like I said, if Trump's impeached or whatever happens, it's just going to be a creepier, scarier backlash. This week, also in racist Portland news. Well, you know, last weekend there was like huge protests and stuff downtown, and all that actually was not as like actually went a lot more peacefully than I thought it was going to do. I can't even talk about it. It's just so frustrating. I'll skip that. But also, just a couple of days ago, there's this music festival that always happens in North Portland. I don't know how many years it's been going on in what was a predominantly black neighborhood, but has been more and more gentrified by white people. And so they just received letters and flyers of threats. Death threats against them, against the threatening the festival, blah, blah, blah. And then yesterday or day before yesterday at one of the middle schools in the neighborhood, not too far from me here, one of the neighborhoods that I walk through when I'm going on a long walk, kids, apparently there were some racist flyers on phone poles around the neighborhood of the school. And then a couple of the students had been followed by someone in a car shouting the N-word and other racial insults and threats to them, to the point where like the school actually filed a police report. And yeah, it's super fucked up. Kids were followed to their bus stop, threatened. You know, and middle school kids, they're like 11, 12, 13 years old, you know. Like, it's fucked up enough to threaten adults putting together a music festival, but to follow and scare the shit out of children? Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I just kind of feel a little resigned about the world near and far, like I said at the beginning. I'm sorry. Compartmentalize. You know, it's not like I didn't leave my apartment this week. Sure, I stayed home to watch the Comey testimony and for the Amazon deliveries. And also because when I went out to run errands and to go for walks this week, I got fucking spooked again. Ugh. That wasn't me clearing my throat. That was me being exasperated. It's like, I forget what day it was. I was running errands over on Hawthorne. You know, the place where I was shoved. You know, the clown pussy. My main neighborhood that I go to for shits. And I thought, like, I'll walk along the side neighborhood streets to do my errands. Because I had to do some, return some things and drop off library books, like all that kind of stuff, and grocery store and whatever. And I was like, I'll avoid all the main transients that panhandle on Hawthorne Avenue by walking through the beautiful side streets, and that way I'll get to look at pretty gardens and all that's very nice, right? Wrong. So I'm there at the corner looking for traffic to see if I can cross, and that's what I'm focusing on. And when I look up, I see this dirtbag on the opposite corner who I noticed from my bus window like a little while earlier before I got dropped off to that area. I was walking around and doing all my errands. And so there was like the dirtbag on the corner. And so when I looked up to look for traffic, I don't know if he thought I was looking at him or what, because I didn't know he was standing there because I was looking for cars. And then that's when I saw him. And he said, hello. And I was still like in that frozen deer in the headlight of like, oh, shit, you're like the creep that I saw from the bus window. And I just was looking for traffic and not expecting to see a human being there, let alone it being you. And so I just kind of do the deer in the headlights and just like don't say anything in response because I'm also just like feel super freaked out with everything that's been going on in the world. So I just shut down and I don't say anything. I just look to see if I can cross the street. And so then he yells at me. He yells at me and says, oh, that's real mature. You look but don't say anything. That's what a child does. That's what a child does. Are you a child? And he said it way louder and way angrier than that. I just don't want to freak out my cat or my neighbors. It's like, dude, it's just a Gaia. He's a fight on two legs. He's just a fight on two legs. He's just somebody looking for a fucking argument and for a fucking fight. And boy, do I understand that feeling really well. Boy, do I. But I don't yell at people. And so then, you know, and you know, I already saw that he had nothing in his hands. Like, that's like, you just do like the super quick, like, scan from head to toe. Like, where could his knife be hidden? Where could that knife be hidden? And I don't say anything in response to his little tirade. Boy, I'd love to. I'd love to fully explain why I just shut down deer in headlights and didn't mean anything, or why I don't say the fuck anything to any stranger at all anymore at all. It's nothing personal against him, or that I'd seen him from the bus window earlier and had clocked him as a dirtbag. I didn't say any of that because time and place, people, compartmentalize. But yeah, and instead I just, instead of crossing the street, because he was standing, conveniently enough, exactly where I planned on crossing to, so I just kind of walked down the street, because the sidewalk was closed, which is why I was going to be crossing over, and I didn't want to get anywhere within arm's reach of him, and so I just walked down the street and kind of kept, you know, kind of stopped when I got to the corner and turned around to see if I saw him and then continued on my way to do the rest of my errands. And instead of continuing to walk and enjoy the neighborhoods after doing my errands, I just got on a bus to get the fuck back home. I'd kind of had enough of the beautiful neighborhood. But I didn't, like, at least I didn't give up for the day. Like, I came home, I peed, whatever. And then I walked to this other neighborhood that I've only taken the bus to, and I've been meaning to walk there because I have to walk more because I'm going to Paris. Look at it there on the TV screen. And so I accomplished a different walking goal by going to a different neighborhood and sitting at the coffee shop and whatever. You know, and then the next day I went to Goodwill, and again, like, walking just from the bus stop. Well, no, like, I did a big long-ass walk. That was how I ended up at Goodwill, because I just was a big, giant 2.5-mile walk downhill. And, again, as I was walking down the sidewalk, like, I noticed a big Breaking Bad, sketchy meth RV, and I was like, ugh. And I didn't have my earbuds in my ears, so I could, like, hear that there was something. And then as I walked past this stoop of a house where this guy clearly didn't live, there was some leather skinned from being outdoors all the time. white dude with little pinpoint eyes, pinpoint pupils, and just a big grin, just like, hi, hi. And I'm like, not saying anything to you, and I am walking back down through the center of the street instead of on the sidewalk again. Yep, 2 days in a row. And it just, you know, it just kind of, it just made me think back to, like, when I lived here before, I used to zigzag and, like, weave through, like, all the Portland streets, because I'd be out walking with my camera, and I would see some old ghost sign, you know, some faded painted advertisement on the side of a building. I'd see something like that off in a distance, or some other building off in a distance, or some beautiful tree and plant, or some weird billboard juxtaposition with the landscape, and just like I would see something that my photo eye would kind of like zoom in on that was far away, and I would zigzag to get to it, and so I would end up getting a lot of walking in before I gave a shit about how much walking I got in, and I would get some pretty cool photos. And then when I first moved back here, I found myself with fewer things catching my eye to photograph. And so I was just zigzagging to avoid the ugly buildings that look like dentist offices or office buildings, but they're really somebody's ugly ass glass box house. And so I just would be zigzagging to, like, let me avoid these ugly architectural nightmares and find the gardens. And so that would be my motivation for zigzagging. And now I zigzag just to avoid, like I said, the Breaking Bad RVs with the side paneling coming off, and you just see rust, or in the wintertime you see propane tanks outside. You know, people are careless with cigarettes. You know, and just dodging campsites, dodging people. I don't like it very much, I gotta say. In case you can't tell by me fucking complaining about it all the time, it's chapping my ass. Ooh, I just looked up at the TV screen and they're showing some pretty cathedral on the inside. Ooh, well, let me get back to things that chat my ass, and let me give you an update about going to the pub. Yeah, that's right. Look, I really thought I had it made. I went there within an hour of them opening on Friday, so it's like, no, I knew I wasn't going to be having any risk of running into Lurch, because I knew he would still be working. And I haven't run into him since that last time I saw him, where he just, I don't know if he was coked up or just, he just did not look good. And I haven't heard from him really since then until yesterday. Yeah, yesterday he texted me. I don't know why he texts me, because it's not, there's not really conversation that, it's just like he's checking in, I guess. But I don't know why, because we're not friends. You know, it's like I check in with my friends because I miss seeing them around, but he and I don't have any established friendship, so I don't understand. And I mentioned that I'd booked my flight to Paris, and he said, oh, good, I hope you'll, I hope that means you'll take pictures for me. And, you know, I'm kind of cunty. I guess maybe I was fed up with the dirtbag men harassing, like, that spooked me out this week and were testifying this week. You know, me, men, don't do so well with them. And so I just kind of responded back like a cunt. Like, well, I'll be taking pictures for myself, just like last time. And I sent him a link to my Flickr account with my entire photo album of all my photos that I took in Paris in 2012. And then I followed up about 10 or 15 minutes later saying, like, oh boy, this week I've been overeating and smoking too much pot, which is true. And maybe that second part would seem like an excuse or a reason for me to be a cunt and immediately react with, like, why the fuck would you, like, I'm sure it was an innocuous, I hope that means you'll be taking pictures for me. I'm sure that was an innocuous statement. I'm sure he meant nothing by it. Sure, I'm just oversensitive to thinking that men are just expecting everything all the time, even if it means just to disrupt my chance to walk down the sidewalk without getting yelled at for being a child. What the fuck? Okay, again, I digress. But I still can't figure out why Lurch texts me, because it never ends up being really much of a conversation, and he's never asking to hang out, or I just don't get it. I don't get it. Maybe it's that moment where he's like, you know, it's either I put my gun in my mouth or I text Rose. Because that is originally why I gave him my number, was like, you know, in case he was feeling desperate and awful and alone. And so maybe he's not sharing those thoughts, but that's why he's texting me. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Because apparently all I am is cunty in response. Yep, there you go. So I went to the pub last Friday to try to get some reading done on this fucking 500-page book. It was sunny, it was beautiful, but it was like not too hot, and it was early enough in the day where the table would still be mainly in the shade and just my legs would be in the sun. Yes, I pay attention to all these details. I make my hypervigilance work for maximum enjoyment where I can, because even whenever I do go out and do anything and I'm sitting in a beautiful, pleasant, and enjoyable environment, my body is so incredibly rigid and stiff, and my stomach is in such a ball of knots that I'm so exhausted when I get home and I have to remember to breathe deeply. So I pay attention to the details, I guess you could say. Pros and cons. And here's the other thing about the pub. If I go there with the intention to sit and read and eat a cheeseburger, as was my plan because I had been doing some massive walking that morning, I'm sure. If I walk there and see that the tables that I want to sit at are just completely taken, or that there's just too many assholes out front, I can keep walking to the corner market and just buy a soda or a bag of chips as if that was what I was doing all along. I know, pretty great. Again, details are important to the way I live my life. Compartmentalize! So I went there and I showed up and I was super happy because there was nobody outside. Patton wasn't there. There were no blowhards. There was no one there. All the tables outside were empty. And when I went inside, my favorite waitress was working there. The one that sounds like Lori Petty, but looks like Megan Fox. And being that it was so early, you know, after opening, there was a regular there, Bernie, who is, he's round. And he has hair on his head, but it's all around the side. So he does this like greasy comb over. He's kind of just like this greasy, balding egg on two legs. So he was belly up to the bar. He was sunny side up there to the bar. And I went outside and was, you know, reading and all that. And Bernie shuffles outside and shuffles away, and he's gone for about 10 minutes. And I don't think anything of it. I'm chowing down. I'm inhaling my cheeseburger. And making my way through my fries and my soda and my water. Gotta hydrate. Compartmentalize. And I'm reading my book, you know, while I'm eating. And I've got my earbuds in because I'm in a safe environment where I can have both my earbuds in and not worry about it. So I'm maximizing that pleasure. Like, it's just, I'm in heaven there. I'm having a great time. Just being me, doing nothing but reading and soaking in some vitamin D and the lovely sounds of sparks. And then Bernie shuffles back and he shuffles past all the empty tables and chairs that are still there. There's no one there. No one's arrived to enjoy this beautiful early. It's only 1:30 in the afternoon on a Friday afternoon. And he sits down at my tiny little table. Now, these are tiny little tables. These are tiny two-seater little tables, the kind that you might see in a Parisian cafe, for example. Tiny little table. And my entire tabletop is taken up with my plate that had my food on it, my water glass, my Pepsi, RC Cola, thank you very much, glasses, and my empty glasses case, and my pen so I can mark poignant paragraphs in my book. And it's got the cardboard crate of all, not cardboard, the wooden crate of all the condiments. I wanted to say cardboard crate of condiments because it's the CCC. So like my whole tabletop is taken up there. And, basically my table could not be any less inviting to any other human contact, which is deliberately set up that way. Again, details are important and compartmentalize. And Bernie shuffles over and he just waddles over, exhales. He exhales, goddammit. Exhales a flume of booze breath as he drops his eggy bottom to the seat. Just plops himself down in the chair on the other side of the condiments. Breathes out. It's like if you had a lighter, you could have set all the surrounding air of my table on fire. He smelled that much of booze. Granted, some of it could have also been what he was sweating out of his eggy body, too. But mainly it came out of his mouth. It just hung in a cloud above us. And again, I've got my earbuds in. I've got my reading glasses on. This is how serious I am. My reading glasses are tinted. I've got two pairs of glasses. They're not really reading glasses per se, like you would get at a drugstore. They are prescription glasses. One of them is tinted just for such occasion of sitting outside in another fucking coffee shop or a park bench to read my motherfucking book. And the Eggman starts to whine that he doesn't understand why he's so tired, because he's only had three drinks since lunch, and suddenly he's too exhausted to walk six blocks home. Now, like I said, he's only had three drinks since lunch. It's only 1:30. He's had three mixed cocktails, three hard liquor drinks in less than an hour. Because like I said, he also shuffled off for 10 minutes. Let's do the word math problem there. If X equals Eggman walking away for 10 minutes minus an hour and three drinks have been consumed, what do you get? A fat fucking piece of shit taking up my table space. And complaining to me about the fact that he can't walk home after I'd already walked 2.5 or 3 miles that day. I know that's nothing compared to what Sanchez walks. We're not talking about Sanchez. We're talking about me. We're talking about this eggy Bernie. And he explains all this after he plops down. He explains all this as his reason for plopping down, because he says, "I hope you don't mind if I rest here for a minute." Oh, you know, you walk past three tables to sit here. So if you were so fucking tired, why didn't you go sit at one of the other empty tables that was far closer to where this crowded mayhem of food and literature and condiments, you know? You know, I'm sounding a little Canadian for a minute there. And it's like, I hope you don't mind if I poured this drink all over your lap after I've poured a drink all over your lap. Like, that's not how the I hopes works. It's not an after the fact kind of a statement. It's a passive aggressive whiny piece of shit move is what it is. Seriously, he walked past three picnic tables with benches that were all empty. And he walked past three tiny tables. So there were six different empty tables outside in the fresh air for him to catch his greasy, boozy tequila breath in. I'm going to guess tequila, probably whiskey. Who knows? Probably schnapps. He's probably a schnapps kind of a guy. Who knows? What I'm saying is he had so many other places to spread his eggs, you know? And then Lori Petty, you know, the waitress comes out to check to see if I, like, to get me a refill of my cola. I'm still desperately trying to keep my face planted in my book. And then Bernie asks if he can trouble her for a glass of seltzer water. You know, not free tap water. Nope, seltzer water that he also wants for free, because she's already, you know, he's already paid out. And that means he's going to settle in for a while to drink his water at my table, where I'm still eating my fries. And then, of course, he has to explain to Lori Petty about the scabbing on his head, where he's balding, where the comb over isn't greased and slicked down upon, where the scab wound is, because apparently he lost a fight with his wicker hamper. I don't know what that means, except for he got too drunk at home and tripped and fell and hit his head on a wicker basket. I'm guessing. I don't know. I'm still trying to read my fucking book. And so I explained to him that, like, okay, so Lori Petty goes back inside to fetch his water, gets his water. He is still sitting there. I'm realizing that he's camped out here for who knows how the fuck long. I need to explain to him why, as a human being who was sitting here for quite a long while enjoying herself politely alone, as a human being should be allowed to do, but I need to explain to him, hey, I'm on a deadline to finish reading this big, massive book. Like, as if everything wasn't already obvious enough about the fact that, like, dude, you're crossing a line here, then I need to put up the final fence, the final wall, the locked door to say, look, I'm not just sitting here at the bar to hang out and make chit-chat. I've got a deadline to read this fucking huge fat book. Oh, I know I sound cunty. Oh, I'm sorry. Compartmentalize? And he asks what page I'm on, and I'm on 86. And he said, oh, you'll be finished in no time. And I'm like, yeah, it's 500 pages. And he's like, oh, but you've read so far already. You'll have it done no problem. And then he pulls out, okay, now first of all, he doesn't pull out his dick. I just realized if I say pulls out and then I do a dramatic pause, it sounds like it's going to say dick. I'm not going to say dick. But yeah. Of course, I'm pissed off that somebody is telling me how quickly I'm going to read a book when they're interrupting me from reading it. How the fuck do you know what my reading pace is like? Do you know how long I have to pace around and around and around and procrastinate before I actually pick up the fucking book? I've had this book assigned for 2 weeks now, and I'm only on page 86. I'm not blowing through this book, sir. I came here deliberately to sit and read. I did not come here. I'm in no way looking like an open social invitation. My tinted glasses are on. My book is in my lap. My earbuds are in my ears. My food is in my face. I'm clearly not coming here to socialize. And I don't know if people just don't understand that sometimes people go out to read and not to socialize, because, like, that happens at coffee shops all the time. And maybe just at bars, I don't know. But then he pulls out his box of, his little carton thing, box, whatever, of cigarettes and his matches. Mm-hmm. And he reaches over to the empty table next to him to pick up the ashtray that I had moved over there when I first sat down, because I don't fucking smoke. I know. I'm sounding irrationally angry over this. We all know it's not just about this. But I don't care. I'm still going to keep going. Fuck off. Look. I'm not compartmentalizing so well. So yeah, he sits, all this has happened. And he pulls out his cigarettes, he pulls out his matches, he reaches over to the empty table next to him to get the ashtray, and then to make room for the ashtray, because, like I said, the tiny tabletop is covered with all of my things, and now he's added his cigarettes and matches, or lighter, whatever, that's precariously balancing on the edge. Well, to make room for the ashtray, he has to shove the wooden crate of condiments towards me and towards my plate. Now, no, nothing falls into my lap. I know that would be hysterically funny. It would actually make the story go somewhere. But something, if something dramatic like that happened, but no. But I'm incensed. Because now the greasy Eggman has not only left a cloud of booze-soaked air above my head, He's interrupted my reading. He's avoided all the empty tables. He's making his problem my problem. Because again, it's all about him and how he's too drunk to walk anywhere because he's fucking exhausted because he's fucking drunk. Not only has all that happened, none of that was good enough for him. Now he has to start shoving stuff around to make room for an ashtray so he can fucking light up and smoke while I'm still eating. So I speak up. Because apparently, explaining that I was on a deadline for a fat fucking book that I wasn't even one-fifth of the way through yet, apparently that wasn't fucking clear enough for the Eggman. He'd taken that inch that I had not given and was now shoving a foot distance to make room for a fucking ashtray to smoke up at my table while I'm eating. No. So I explain in bullet point order, pretty close to this tone of voice. Hey, Bernie, I'm eating and I'm asthmatic. And that's why I moved the ashtray to the empty table next to you before I sat down here. And you're welcome to sit and smoke at any of the empty tables, but you can't smoke at the table where I'm sitting. And I'm reading, and I'm eating. And he's petulant, and he sighs. More another flume of booze smoke wafts over my head and up into my nostrils and into my mouth, coating my French fries with just, oh, like cough syrup, thick booze smell. And he sighs. And he moves his lighter a little bit, and he puts the ashtray back on the table, and he says, oh, that's okay, I just was getting my cigarettes out for later. He has to save face. He can't apologize for overstepping these boundaries, because that's the thing about Lurch. I did mention this positive trait about Lurch in the past. Is that when he comes out to smoke, which is the only time that we ever chat at the pub, because I don't hang out inside unless it's stinking hot and I need the air conditioning. When he comes out to smoke, he never sits at my table. He sits at the table next to me or he stands across from me. Like, he's so careful about the wind. Like, there's been times when it's been crowded or because we were talking about personal stuff that I didn't want him to feel like he had to like shout to talk to me, so I would invite him to sit at my table. And he's, you know, been very careful about like his smoke, like super, super nice about it, but not drunk Bernie Eggman. No, he's just petulant. He's just been put out. He can't acknowledge that he's just baby Huey'd all over my table. And now wants to, like, pee booze and smoke cigarettes all over it, too. He can't acknowledge any of that. He can't apologize. No, he's got to say, oh, I was just taking these out for later. For later. Really? Where? Later at this table? Where? What? Huh? Okay. Okay. And then he whines a bit more about being too weak to walk home. And is complaining that he doesn't want to wait forever for a cab. And I suggest Lyft, you know, or Uber. And he doesn't have a phone for an app, so he can't do that. And he just keeps going on and on and on about how he really wishes he could have a ride home. He really just doesn't feel like walking the 6 blocks home. He's just really tired, doesn't really wishes he could find a ride home. And I look at him and I say, I'm eating. I'm asthmatic. That's why I moved the ash. Oh, no, I didn't say those things. I said, oh, well, sorry, can't help you with that. I've never had a driver's license. Because that's all I could think of was, like, why was he continuing to go on and on saying he wished he had a ride home, unless he was hoping maybe nice lady who'd been so nice and shared her table with him so he could rest, but wouldn't let him smoke. She's a bitch. Maybe she'd give him a ride home. No, hey, nope. Can never do that. Could never do that. Can never do that. Never had a license. Sorry, Eggman. And so he finishes his water. He takes like one big giant slurpy sound from his straw. So dramatic. Yep, that's right. You've sucked it dry, Bernie. Congratulations. Your life is over. And he just takes his greasy, scabby, drunk child egg man body on two legs and shuffles inside the pub, and then he shuffles back out a few minutes later with this 20-something-year-old dude who I think is a regular there. And yeah, that's how Bernie roped that guy into giving him a ride home. I don't know if he, like, shuffled off someplace to, like, shoot up some heroin, and that's why he came back suddenly super tired, because he wasn't... No, he would have nodded off. Yeah, I don't know where he shuffled off to for 10 minutes to meet a friend, and that exhausted him. That and the three mixed drinks. And so, yeah. And, you know, Bernie doesn't wave or say goodbye after disrupting me at all. Doesn't acknowledge me at all while when he's leaving. Not when he goes, not when he leaves my table to go into the pub. Now when he's leaving the pub with this ride that he's coerced from somebody, nope, he didn't acknowledge me at all. It's like I guess because I didn't let him smoke at my table, or because I couldn't give him a ride home, or you know, it didn't matter that he'd interrupted me with my reading because, like you said, I was going to be finished in no time. And, well, Bernie was clearly finished with me at that point. No smokes, no ride, no wave goodbye. Like, what the? Ah, drunk people. And I know. You're like, well, what do you expect? You go to a pub. I went there at, like, practically opening time on a Friday on a beautiful day when I knew it would be dead. Like, I really thought the odds were going to be in my favor. I just wanted to sit outdoors, soak in some sun. Like, yeah, I can sit on my patio, but it doesn't get the sun in the afternoon. And the laundry room is right on the other side of it. And so when people are doing laundry, I'm smelling all their bounce sheets because the dryer vent is pointed towards my patio, conveniently enough. And nobody was going to bring me a cheeseburger and french fries on my patio. You know, that's the closest place for me to walk and get such a thing. Why do drunk people have to be attached to it? Why can't alcoholics have manners? Riddle me this. Why can't alcoholics have manners? I don't know. So anyway, the other highlight of my week is I did the ultimate old lady thing, and I went to the grand opening of a grocery store. That's right, the grand opening of a brand new grocery store in my neighborhood, just like an old lady would do because she got the postcard in the mail from the brand new grocery store. Yeah, whatever. Free samples. That's why I went. It's a natural, they're called natural grocers, so their organic stuff is about the same price as my regular grocery store's organic stuff is that I don't buy because it's too expensive. But I did get all sorts of free samples of powdered drinks, like Effercy, like whatever version of Emergency. I got a bunch of elderberries because I was feeling very elder going to the grand opening of the grocery store. Yes, opening day. And funny thing about that grocery store, it's within walking distance. It's right across the street from the Safeway that I never go to because of all the panhandlers inside and outside the store and because it's super overpriced and it's just creepy. But where the natural grocers used to be where the Department of Health and Human Services building was. The building is still there. that office has just moved out. But when that office was there, that was where I went and applied for and got my food stamp card. And so there I was. Then the office moved out. Then the building was vacant for a while. And then there I was, opening day of the brand new grocery store, buying my, what did I get? I got some fancy rose tea. Ooh, the real deal was I did get organic strawberries and organic grapes because they were cheaper than the regular strawberries and grapes at the grocery store, like by a dollar. Like they were a bargain. So there in the same building where I had applied for and received my first food stamps card, I used that same food stamps card to get my strawberries and my grapes. Full circle, my friends. Compartmentalize!